It is August 6th, 2018. I'm calling the Legislative Council meeting to order at 9:10 a.m. Molly, would you please call the roll?
Representative Klayman.
Here.
Speaker Edmund.
Here.
Representative Quito. Representative Quito. Representative Millett.
Here.
Representative Ortiz.
Here.
Representative Stutes.
Here.
Representative Drummond.
Here.
Representative Eastman.
Here.
Senator Coghill. Senator Coghill. Senator Giesel. Senator Giesel. Senator Hoffman. Senator Hoffman. Senator Kelly.
Here.
Senator McKinnon.
Here.
Senator Machicki. Senator Machicki. Senator Costello. Vice Chair Stedman.
Here.
Here. Thank you. We have 11 members present. We will go down to the agenda. There's an revised agenda that includes an executive session. Senator McKinnon?
I move the Legislative Council approve the agenda to include executive session.
Is there discussion on the agenda? Anyone online? Okay. The agenda has been approved. Next order of business is the legislative hiring subcommittee recommendations. I will walk through the process that we had and did, and then get to the candidate. So when Doug Gardner gave me his letter of resignation, what I did was I tried to mimic the committee that did the same work 10 years ago. And I was on Ledge Council, but I wasn't on the hiring committee. And they set up a hiring committee of the majority and minority members from both parties, the executive director, and the chair. And we put out notice internally and externally for a two-week period, which was a balance between both issues, but both people, most people wanted. We had two applicants, and we advanced the name of one. And that's where we are now. If there's any questions on the process, because some people question the process and how did it happen, and that's how we walked through it, and that's why we did what we did. Ms. Wallace, would you like to come to the table? So before we have this conversation with Ms. Wallace, if it gets into like a job interview where it becomes a personal issue, we will have to go into executive session because those are executive session personnel issues. That is the appropriate place to do that. But Ms. Wallace, can you open up, tell us why you want to do this job?
Good morning. For the record, Megan Wallace, Legislative Legal Services. I applied for this job primarily because I love the work. And I think it's a privilege to work so closely on matters that are important to Alaskans and to the state. And at Legal Services, we have a very intimate relationship with the legislation that makes its way through the body, or the bodies. And I was ready for some new opportunities, and I'm excited to lead a very talented team at Legal Services and continue to provide the quality of work that you are accustomed to.
Senator McKenna.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, Megan, thank you for applying, and thank you for your work on behalf of the people of Alaska and the legislative body. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to go on record in supporting Ms. Wallace. Representative Klayman and I had the privilege of being co-chairs of a policy that brought to Legislative Council last year, and during that time we worked closely with Ms. Wallace on some fairly delicate issues. I'm talking about the sexual harassment policy, and I was pleased that when issues arose that Ms. Wallace did not take party lines, that she took professionalism to an extreme in laying out a detailed analysis for our consideration and then left it to the policymakers. And so I believe she is a capable person, that she has integrity, and that she loves her job and the people that she works with. As we move forward in this discussion, I would like to ask her, should she receive our recommendation going out of here, what she believes may be solutions to solve some of the turnover problems that we have, some of the workload that our legislative legal have been enduring over the last few years with reduced resources available to them and sometimes just not the applicants available to hire. And the minute Mr. Gardner would get folks hired because of the stress load of a legislative session or other issues, that staff would move over to other departments that were, let's say, more family-friendly in nature than a legislative session might be. And, you know, for the general public, our team, especially our legislative legal team, as well as our all the folks that support the legislative process, they work hours into the night to make sure that we're ready to go the next day to go back through some of these same issues. And so if we come up with an issue or an amendment at 5 o'clock, and a committee is meeting at 8 o'clock the next morning, at least in the past, our legislative team, as well as all that are supporting the legislature, are there hours into the evening trying to meet our requests. And so these are challenges that the previous executive director, as well as the director of legal services, had to face. Our legislative auditors are facing the same thing. And so, again, if we move it forward, Ms. Wallace has my endorsement. I know she's in it for the long haul, and that she wears those extra tufts, just like meaning Alaskans, and makes it to the riverbanks to help the legislature keep on flowing. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Klayman.
I'll just echo much of what Senator McKenna has said. I have worked with you periodically on different legal matters, but the heaviest matter was working on the sexual harassment policy, and one of the features that I look for as a practicing attorney and getting advice from attorneys is the willingness to basically tell the client that they are wrong and that we need to follow the advice of our counsel. And there were numerous times during the course of working on the sexual harassment policy that not only did you say to us, this is an area where you need to make the policy call because that's your role as legislators, but there were other times in which you were very comfortable saying that we really shouldn't go down that path because there are legal impediments and you were providing the advice that we needed to hear. That is perhaps the most important thing that a lawyer can tell their client, which is you really need to listen to the lawyer and not lose track of the law. And so that, for those reasons, I have great confidence in your application for this job. I think you'll do a great job in it. And I also know from, you know, seeing you actually not officially now as you were walking from the office down to get your children from childcare that you've really figured out how to get a good balance between work and family and not having it overwhelm, not having work so overwhelming that you're not still finding time for your kids. And in terms of having a family-friendly environment, I also see you as somebody that understands how to maintain that balance between how hard you're working, but also sometimes saying, you know, something that's this is the time I have to go pick up my sister. You know, I've got employees that actually need this time, and you, legislator, are going to have to wait. And I appreciate that, that also, that degree of balance that you reflect. So I'm very pleased that you've applied. I'm very pleased that you're recommending you have full support.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Ms. Wallace, so your predecessor has worn many hats, and one of those was officially, unofficially, the parliamentarian. And I'm wondering, how do you see yourself filling that role, or do you see yourself having someone else fill that?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, that is a hat that the director traditionally wears, and I look forward to putting that hat on, so to speak. The director has primarily handled those matters. As drafting attorneys, we are familiar with uniform rules. We often field questions from committee aides as we draft bills, and those they move through the process. I think one advantage that I possess is that I've watched and nearly every floor session that for the last 5 years, and so I'm familiar with the motions that are made, the issues that arise, the limited amount of time that is allowed to, you know, make decisions, provide advice. And so I'm comfortable getting up to speed and being prepared, you know, in January when you go in. I have a little bit of homework to do, but it's not something that intimidates me, and I think that I will be prepared and ready to go in January.
Thank you.
Senator McKinnon.
Ms. Wallace, can you provide me some legal advice on the process that we used for procuring the position? Are we within the parameters and operating efficiently in the two-week notice process?
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, there's nothing about, I haven't been involved, obviously, in the process in terms of helping effectuate that, but there's nothing from the process that's gone forward that gives me any pause or concern that the process could be challenged.
Thank you.
And to follow up with that, I have taken the advice of the agency, and Skiff Lombard, our HR guy, was at the table at every turn just to make sure I was doing everything right.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator McKinnon.
And through multiple hiring processes of executives to work for the legislature. And I just want to say that most of the applications that we receive for any particular position is based on a deadline. And so when you put whatever that deadline is, 30 days, 2 weeks, or 60 or 90 days, most of the applicants that are truly interested in the position apply early. And so I support the process that used to determine this outcome.
Here. Anybody online? Any questions online or any comments?
This is Representative Stutz. I would like to echo what both Senator McKinnon and Representative Clayman have said. And the other thing that I noticed was our applicant has a very reassuring calmness about her. As we all know, sometimes we can get excited over issues as legislators, and she was not remote. It did not appear to me that she was remotely affected by that and maintained a calm, steady directiveness in her advice to us, and I truly appreciated that.
Thank you. Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was on the hiring committee, and I just want to say I would also like to speak in favor of hiring Ms. Wallace. During our interview process, she, I think, did a really great job in sort of explaining how the job of being the director of the legal services, I think making broke down into three categories. One was sort of the management aspect of it all. The other was your background and sort of build back in technical expertise that's pretty unique to somebody who works at legislative legal. And then the third element was the parliamentary aspect of it all. And it was during our conversation that I came to better appreciate how much legislative legal does. I think we sort of, in many respects, take for granted that the work product is always there, but as well, it sort of underscores how I think unique the job is of being the director and how your skills are very appropriate for that position. And the qualities you bring, I think, allow you to sort of step in and take the reins and not to have any sort of learning curve as there might be with somebody from the outside coming in, which Mr. Gardner, you know, sort of readily admits was what happened when he came in on the job. And so for that, Mr. Chairman, I just, being on the hiring committee, wanted to go.
Anything else from anyone online? Any members online? Any comments? Representative Eastman?
Mr. Chairman, just a question for those who weren't on the hiring panel. I'm wondering, what information do we anticipate will be made available either during after the conclusion of this process? I know, were there any other applicants, for example? Is there going to be information on number of applicants or that type of information made available?
I don't believe that is available, to make that available to people that didn't get it or disqualified or didn't advance. I'm not sure, but we'll check with Skiff Lombar, HR guy, if it's inappropriate. Some people do, we'll take that up.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, just I've already said that I'm going to endorse Ms. Wallace, but Megan, can you talk to me about the condition of legislative services, how many vacancies currently exist there? Is that appropriate for now, or should it be better said inside of a more informal process?
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, I can give a general overview in terms of where we are staffing-wise. If you want to go into depth in terms of maybe some strategies of filling those positions or whatnot, it's probably better for a executive session type discussion, but I'm happy to generally discuss where we are. We, as many of you know, we lost a drafting attorney in the middle of session, last session. And so that position needs to be filled. And more recently, we had another attorney submit a letter of resignation. So we will have to fill our revisor position. But overall, I think that the office is in good shape. We have some attorneys that are very talented in the office, several of which have been in the office for many years. We have several new attorneys that have, you know, last session we had two new attorneys start, and they did great work. I think this next session they'll be on their feet running from the gate. And so one of the tasks as the director would be to for some successful recruiting here before next session. And I'm an optimist at heart, so I'm optimistic that we'll get some good applicants. I think that as long as you do a good job vetting the applications that come through and you hire the most qualified people that have applied for those positions, that we'll have some good luck. And historically, the hiring at Legal Services has been successful. And the attorneys that we tend to use an informal kind of hiring committee process, there's more than one person involved in recruiting, and we get the feedback of the different components of the office, from the, you know, the director and the revisors, and, you know, even the editors look at resumes and so forth, so that we have a collective assurance that we're comfortable moving forward with candidates. So we have a little bit of recruiting to do, but we have time to do some training, and this is an opportunity for the office to move forward. There's an opportunity to find efficiencies and to make sure that we're working smarter, not harder. And I look forward to helping implement some, you know, not an overhaul, but some tweaks here and there to make the process more efficient and allow the office to continue to do good work.
Anything else? Comments?
Mr. Chairman, just a quick comment. I think it bears repeating that, I don't know if you said it at the outset, so I apologize if you did, but legislative council actually were sort of acting in an advisory capacity here because the Legislative Affairs Director actually makes this selection, if I remember the statute correctly.
Yeah, so let me clarify this process. You appointed a hiring committee to do the interviews and the hiring process to give a recommendation to Ledge Council, but the executive director is the hiring authority, Jessica Gary. And when I asked why this is so, we got a history of if we hire a separate executive director, we're under his own authority, essentially creating another agency in the legislative affairs. And seeing as it hasn't been broken and there hasn't been complaints about it, there was nothing to fix. So we just continue doing it. And Ms. Gary clearly wanted the advice of Ledge Council because it's so the position is so close to us. It's so integrated in what we do. And so we just will be making a recommendation to the Legislative Affairs Executive Director. That's what we do. Anything else? Mr. Senator?
Mr. Chairman, I move that Legislative Council accept the recommendation of the Hiring Subcommittee for the Legal Services Director, and authorize the Executive Director to promote Megan Wallace.
Roll call, please.
Representative Klayman.
Yes.
Representative Reggie.
Yes.
Representative Millett.
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Stute.
Yes.
Representative Drummond.
Yes.
Senator Kelly.
Yes.
Senator McKinnon.
Yes.
Vice Chair Stedman.
Yes.
Chair Gettner.
Yes. And with that, Ms. Wallace, you have my condolences. The next order, so this meeting was thought to be just that business, but things have come up, and as life happens, we have other things on the agenda. Scurry, would you come up? Who's appropriate to talk about the business of the building? Who is it that would be going to present that? Have that conversation.
Good morning. For the record, Jessica Geary, Executive Director for Legislative Affairs.
Alicia Martin with Colliers International.
Thank you. So we have a budget item dealing with the demolition and of the third floor and the design, and it rolls into the other things that are ongoing, which is the ceiling and the painting of the building, the signage, and how we're going to allocate that. So let's start off with the ceiling and the paint and the signage issue and what happened with that, where we're at now. You can give us the more current history.
Of course. So, Mr. Chairman, at the June 26th meeting, we approved some money to reseal and paint the exterior of this building. And once the contractor started going out and looking into that, it was became clear that that couldn't be done during this season. It would be something that would have to be undertaken next year. And then the same goes with our exterior signage. We have some design work that's in process, but we're not in love with the proposal. And so it was a good opportunity to we need the third floor to be demolished because right now we have Wells Fargo has vacated. We need the contractor to go through and sort of take down everything and And we also need some design work done for the second and fourth floor should we continue on with the remodel. So that leaves us with some money that's been authorized but can't be used this season. And so it seemed prudent to reallocate those funds to go towards the work that needs to be done and that can be done, and which would require some additional funds, $107,775. Alicia, did I cover everything?
So my question to the council is, as we go forward with this, the design and the and the demolition, do we want to just take the money reallocated, which point, at some time in the future, we're going to have to reallocate it, or do we just want to fund what needs to be done with the demolition and the design work now, and then we won't have to come back later and fund those things? We can discuss what we're doing, how we're walking down the road, but I think that's part of the big issue is, do we take the money we reallocated, or just allocate the money that needs to be done? And I'm just repeating myself, but money for the signage and the cleaning will just be in place. So those are the two options that I see. Is there a discussion on which rate to go? At first I said, well, let's fund the smallest amount of money, because that seems to be the easiest always to get through, but we're just going to come back again next time or at some point in the next year and reallocate it. But whatever is the wish of the council, I would, if it was my druthers, I would just allocate the money that needs to be done, and we don't have to vote on it again. The painting and the signage is already in place. Is anybody online?
This is Representative Stutes. I would like to see us just appropriate the additional funds that we need as opposed to reallocating. I think that we're kind of opening up a can of worms if we – I think it would just be cleaner. Let me just put it that way.
And it's clear we don't have to go back to the legislature for additional funds. These have already been appropriated to the agency.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I need a little clarity on the additional funds that will be required, and I'm, if I understand it correctly, it's for the demolition of the third floor and the start of design work for the other two floors.
Yes.
The amount. I was not clear on the amount.
Oh, I'm sorry. So in this spreadsheet, we have current budget commitments in phase two. I hope everybody has it. If they don't have it, it's on basis. It is the total funds available. I mean, it is what we're seeing is we need to do the whole thing, either $557,700, or if we do the allocation, reallocate money that's already spent. It's only $108,000.
Mr. Chairman, I think what you're presenting, and perhaps the executive director as well, is benefit in doing the additional $108,000 worth of work now. It's saving time and sort of effort and having to come back to this project at a later time. Is that what I'm...
It's the larger number that saves us not having to come back and so with the $108,000, we are taking money, reallocating money that's already been used for the painting and the cleaning of the building and the signage, the two different contracts, I believe. And with $108,000, we're taking that money back and putting it into the demolition and the design. And with the larger number, we're just allocating what it needs to do with the design and demolition. Did I get that straight? I think I... Okay.
You did.
All right. So that money will need to be spent regardless. It's whether we take the the heavy maintenance work and the signage and use that now and then come back in November or December or January or next legislature and vote to put it back in for the next spring. Have we already, are we already under contract for the signage and the cleaning? We're not under contract yet. So that's not encumbered money either. Okay. So we have Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jessica, I have a couple questions. When we move from downtown Anchorage to this building, we purchased knowing that this building needed renovations, but we had a fixed expense for the people of Alaska, and so that they would understand and know how we were going to use those dollars to benefit the people. We landed on this building, at least I'll just speak for my vote on this building, because it wasn't luxurious, but it was sort of the meat and bones were here to provide a centralized point for Alaskans to gather to talk about important issues. But one of the other things that we talked about was using some of our square footage to generate revenue. And so we're doing that right now. We rent to Wells Fargo, a tenant of ours that helps create a positive revenue flow for the building. And so have we considered or are we utilizing all of the floors? Because we did talk about possibly bringing in another renter to help us defer other costs. So when we're looking at design and other things, I just wonder, I'm not moving forward, so for those that might be following us today, I have not offered my name for re-election, but I was intimate with the purchase of this building and why we were going a particular direction and wanting to make sure that we receive as much value for the people of Alaska. And so when we're talking about spending money, I just want to put on the record, we're spending money, but we're getting money in return for what we're spending in building improvements because we're generating revenue through, whether it was a satellite, we have some kind of IT generation on the top of the building that's bringing in small amounts of money, and we have a renter that is paying us for their use of those facilities. So can you talk to me about that, and are we looking at freeing up any other space? The other thing that we had talked about was relocating the ombudsman's office or another state service into this building so that we could, again, decrease the legislative expense for the people of Alaska.
Great question. Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, the remodel plans include moving in the ombudsman. In fact, we're already in the process of moving them in. Also, the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics and we would like to, at some point, entertain moving legislative audit in as well. That would save us tremendously on rent costs. So that is in the plan. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I support moving forward with the full amount of money.
Any other comments from anyone online? No comments, Kenan?
Mr. Chairman, I move Legislative Council reauthorize the funds for the exterior building seal and paint and building signage and approve $108,000 for the demolition of the third floor, design for the second floor and fourth floor, and permit fees.
Your brief headings. Is this the one you want?
Are you guys still there? I can't hear you.
Oh, we're green now. Thank you. We thought we were back on, but we weren't. We're back in out of at ease, Senator McKinnon.
Mr. Chairman, I withdraw that motion. I'd like to restate the motion. Mr. Chairman, I move that Legislative Council approve $557,702 for the demolition of the third floor design for the second and fourth floor of the Anchorage Legislative Office Building and permit fees.
Would you call the roll?
Representative Klayman.
Yes.
Representative Edgman.
Yes.
Representative Millett.
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Stutes.
Yes.
Representative Drummond.
Yes.
Senator Kelly.
Yes.
Senator Kelly.
Yes.
Senator McKinnon.
Yes.
Vice Chair Stedman.
Yes.
Chair Gettinger.
Yes. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, this is Pete Kelly. Did the secretary get my vote?
Yes, she did. She's indicating that she did, Senator.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for checking. So the next item on the agenda is the voting machines. Would Mr. Benizak please come up and fill us in on this proposal?
Good morning, and thank you, Mr. Chairman, Council. For the record, my name is Tim Danizak, and I'm the IT manager for the legislature. So this is one of those items that we appreciate the Council being willing to hear this morning. It's been a work in progress over the last couple of years and has reached critical mass. So the request before you, Mr. Chairman, is for the legislative electronic voting system has reached its end of life status and is failing. The existing system.
Excuse me, Mr. Benizak, we have a brief edit. Okay. So we are at ease. The discussion was concerning the nature of this proposal. We'll continue this proposal and this dialogue, and if appropriate, we will have a we will save the motion required till after executive session. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The existing system uses components that are over 2 decades old and have become unsupportable. The loading system, of course, is critical during floor sessions and it's required under Uniform Rule 34. As such, we are requesting authorization from Legislative Council to proceed with the required hardware and software replacement. Total cost, project cost, is $912,700. We also wanted to build in a 10% contingency of $91,270. Included with this is an annual maintenance cost of $17,300. We indicated below a table that talked about the amortized cost over the 10-year period. Through some conclusions around if we had to delay, as we did in the 29th legislature, some of the four votes, the costs associated with that, it only takes a day or two or three, and we've offset the cost, the amortized cost of $100,000.
Could you repeat what you, that point?
Yes. The amortized 10-year, the annual amortized cost of the voting system replacement or overhaul, $108,000 correlates to a day, two, or three of extended session costs that would have to be incurred if we weren't able to provide the votes on time.
So in the context of that, what you're saying is if something happened to this existing board, and we had to delay a floor session, we went into an extended session, or in that it just, the difference goes away immediately.
Correct. The existing voting system no longer functions reliably. It is experiences outages despite vendor, technical, and support staff efforts. Currently, the voting system is operating on a platform that is no longer supported. And one of the recommendations that we have is to update the operating system and some of the software components that are included with that. Some of the upgrades that have been looked at were delayed for a number of reasons. One was the cost. Certainly this is something to change. And there was also the 3-year capital project to deal with the seismic retrofit. There were certainly special sessions, and this is no small task overhauling the system. And there were certainly other priority technology infrastructure upgrades. Also included, you have a proposed project itemized cost so that you could look at some of the details of the costs and understand the different components that are in there. This project, we would anticipate remediating the critical issues going into this session to make sure that the system does stay up and does function. We want to have those remediated by October 15th for some of the items and November 1st for the rest of those to make sure the system is up running comfortably. The rest of the project would be concluded just after session. So if session were to finish, let's say, if we were to be done and able to start the work June 1st, if we were to select that date, we could be done with the system, complete overhaul of the system by June 30th. With that, Mr. Chairman.
Well, Mr. Banaszak, you are a victim of your own abilities to keep that system piecemeal together. So we didn't have long and easy. And it wasn't obvious to us. I know Representative talked about, you know, people sliding into the wall, into the room under the voting board, you know, and working while we're doing there in the chambers. So, question. Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking at the memo that is dated August 1st, 2018, and on page 2 of that memo, it outlines the proposed project itemized costs. And I'm wondering, with identical Senate chamber and House chamber descriptions, what the $5,000, $4,500 difference is between the Senate and the House. So there's $242,500 listed for the Senate chambers for 2 full color, 1.9 mm LED messengers, et cetera, message board, et cetera, and then it's $247,000 for the House. So could you tell me what the difference is?
Certainly through the chair, Senator McKinnon. The voting displays in the Senate and in the House are slightly different sizes. And unlike a traditional display that you might see if you buy the whole component, put it up on the wall and watch it, these are actually integral parts. So each component of the display is made up of many different mini displays in there. And so we took the sizing of the Senate and the real estate we had to work with without doing any remodeling or changing to make sure that it fit. The Senate is also a little bit smaller body, so we didn't have to have the screens quite as large. Given the number of on the House side, and the chambers on that side, displays are built a little bit larger with more components in there, hence the difference in cost.
Senator McKinnon.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for that explanation. That makes sense. Can you tell me when we're talking about a full-color display, is that just because we have 3 colors, or is there something new that will be there? Are we going to be able to flash flags or 4th of July signs, or is that just is this just a standard thing that when we're using white, green, red, and yellow that's called full color, or are we getting the Cadillac or the Volkswagen?
It's a very functional Volkswagen. And but with that, we now have the ability, if there was, for example, State of the State, that could be displayed up on these displays. If we did want to put the flag up there, if we did want to put the state seal up there, we can certainly do that system.
Mr. Chairman, lastly, I live in the community of Eagle River, and we have the name Anchorage. We have our own zip code, so we like to be called Eagle River. But Anchorage has been going through a technology upgrade for multiple years, and when I served in the assembly, we started down the PeopleSoft route, which just cost millions of dollars and money going down a rat hole from many's perspective. And the same thing seems to be happening with technology as they're trying to upgrade now, that multiple money is just going out the window after a vendor gets a hold of a government entity. And we can't conclude the project within the parameters of the estimates that we receive. How confident are you in the proposal that is before Legislative Council that these numbers are fixed and that we'll get the outcome and completion of projects? Has this company been experienced in other on other upgrades that they actually work within the confines of an estimate that you provide the government agency?
Through the chair, thank you for that question. So the short answer is yes, we have a high degree of confidence that the project will be done on time, given that we have when session concludes, and it will be done on budget. This company has a very good reputation. It's currently hosts, provides the voting systems for over 75 chambers around the country, including U.S. Congress. And the company that we're using, we've spent quite a bit of time going over the proposals and looking at the timelines, and they've demonstrated to us that if there's problems, they will make it right for us without the state having to incur additional costs. One of the things that this proposal does is it shifts the risk from the state to the vendor. And if there's parts or pieces that they didn't account for, they have to include that as part of this fixed cost. We were trying to get the entire system done in time for this session. But given where we are now in August, and then if this does get approved, the company did not want to implement a brand new system that quickly to make sure that we had the time to understand that. So the conversations with them have been very deliberative, very thoughtful. The proposal has gone through quite a few iterations. It's gone through the IT legislative subcommittee. It received modifications during that subcommittee. We had to go back to the vendor. So this has been vetted over and over again. And to the point where now we feel comfortable bringing it to council for request and not have to be back here for this group.
Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize, but I have a follow-up on the maintenance issue. And in your memo, you stated that the products, some of the products, their support failed after a while. We bought the last system, and then apparently we're experiencing difficulties in maintaining the system. So the company that you're recommending and the subcommittee supported, do they do follow-up maintenance? Is there an extended warranty period? How long is the system going to be supported? And have we seen that in the other states that or other government entities that are doing that?
Yes, through the chair, Senator McKinnon. So the system comes with a one-year warranty. Any issues with that, they cover the cost of that. The maintenance cost of $17,300 a year covers all the hardware, engineering time, and they've demonstrated to us, as we saw in the 29th legislature, they had to make trips back and forth up here. They had to replace numerous components to the hardware of the system, and they made good on it. And so we don't see any reason to, as long as we have that maintenance contract in place, that does shift, again, the risk to them. And in other states and folks that we've talked to, and then just our experience, this is our third iteration of this company, we don't see any need to change products. The other benefit I would say, too, if I may, just briefly, by maintaining the existing relationship, we receive a lot of credits and discounts on some of the existing hardware, so it reduces the cost of the system. And there's also a lot of what might be perceived as just the voting board, those databases and applications behind. There's a lot of programming that's been customized for Alaska legislature's use in the chambers. That program can be used in the overhaul process as well.
So just two questions. This is not just the voting board. This is an integrated system into the basis system, into the how things appear online to the public. But the slippage of the timeline and concern about that, you're not going to – so you're, if this passes, you're going to change major components in October, and that's going to allow testing time. What happens if they're not ready in January?
Be ready. So that's part of how we size this project. There were additional things we would really like to get done, but there's too much. We did not have a high enough confidence level to take on more work. So we only took on the most critical exposure components of the system and said, we have to have those done. We don't have an option. So that is all we've taken on. So with the October 15th and the November 1st, that gives us some buffer time, so it will be completed by June. And we have our own folks They reviewed that analysis. The company has given us an updated proposal that shows that milestone and deliverable, and we're confident we'll have that ready.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow up to that conversation and then my question about age. So, Mr. Banasek, we won't see, returning legislators won't see any difference in January. You're simply upgrading and beefing up the guts of the system so that we don't have working issues during the next session.
Sir, Representative Drummond, that's correct.
And in terms of the lifespan, how long did the previous system, how old was the previous system, and in terms of how quickly technology changes these days? I know you've got a 10-year, got this system amortized over 10-year with a 10-year maintenance contract. What if things change prior to that 10 years? What's the expected lifespan of the system compared to the one that we're replacing?
So, through the chair, Representative Drummond, the lifespan, we picked 10 years. That seems to stretch the system about as far as you would want to go. And that's kind of where we are today. The system is made up of many subcomponents. Some of those components that the legislature is using today date back 20 years and even longer. So some of those things that may cause a failure for one member or another member, at least it's not the whole system infrastructure. Those are some of the components that have the life has been extended on that. So I'd say 10 years. The other important part with that is the maintenance agreement component, so that when there are updates to the system, we do get those to extend the life of that. Now, if there was some major compromise of some type and we had to go in 3, 4, 5, 6 years into there, those are somewhat unpredictable, but this has built in some depreciation costs, some investment costs to maintain the system at a acceptable level. And this problem, these issues we're seeing now, we began to develop in the 29th legislature and had time. I can appreciate the comment earlier. It seems like it's all at once, but it's been just timing, I think, and coordination. We began planning for this, and we would hope that in the future, if that occurs, that there'd be some awareness to the council.
Thank you.
Senator Eastman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Banas, I appreciate the presentation to the IT subcommittee. It was very informative and gave me new insight into how much time this project is taking away from staff as far as just being able to maintain it, keep it functional during the session, during the special sessions. I wasn't aware until that meeting. My question is, once this project is approved, and I can't speak for my colleagues in the Senate, but when you hit the button, will you only have to hit it one time?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, not in this legislature, but after the June upgrade, then yes. Bill?
Thank you. That would be great.
Okay.
Are there any comments for anyone online? If not, we will. Senator Kennedy.
Mr. Chairman, just for the record that we establish, there's written justification before us for applying Section 040 of the voting system replacement under Section 040 of the legislative procurement processes. We would be determining that we were going forward in a sole source way, and I'm wondering if we want to put some of that determination on the record, at least as an explanation of why that's being recommended.
Mr. Banasek.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for that. Question, Senator McKinnon. So the procurement piece of this is always, very important. So this contract or this procurement would be considered sole source contract, which means there's only one vendor in the market who provides the International Roll Call or IRC voting system, the configuration, installation, and support of that. If the state were to go out and do a full RFP process, IRC would be the only qualified respondent, even after going through that exercise. Some benefits to the state are that, we've talked about some of these before. We've got, again, pointed out a vendor that's already developed the hardware and software programming, so that has helped reduce the overall the cost of the system. We mentioned the 75 chambers where this is used already. One of the things that was important to the U.S. Congress was that tax dollars spent on their system went to a U.S. company exclusively. And they did the vendor analysis on that. IRC was the only completely U.S.-based system that U.S. tax dollars went to at. The other benefit to this approach is that we can be working in parallel with the current system, new system side, and then also the ability to completely retool, retrain the presiding officers and chief clerk, Senate secretary, and technical staff who manage to use the system on a daily basis by using this vendor. We don't incur that as well. And the other thing that it does for us is it provides a single vendor system, one throat to choke, if you will. If there's any issues, we don't have to mitigate between multiple vendors that are out there. And then as Representative Guttenberg, Mr. Chairman, pointed out, it also interfaces to our daily journals and the legislature basis platform. So that's some of the analysis and detail that went into this presentation.
Thank you.
If there's no more comment, we will leave this till later on, finish this up later in the agenda. Thank you, Mr. Banaszak. The next item on the agenda is the Unalaska LIO. Mr. Powers, you're on.
For the record, my name is Tim Powers, Manager of Information and Teleconference for the Legislative Affairs Agency. Before you today to bring up two topics which coincide timing-wise on the Unalaska LIO and the LIO office hours. So I'd like to start with the LIO office hours. Since the budget crisis began, the LIO has been subject to a string of budget hits. In FY16, we saw about a $360,000 reduction, which turned two LIOs from 12-month to 6-month positions. We lost funding for information assistance in Fairbanks and Matsu. They were cut from 12 to 6 months as well. In Juneau, we had our moderator fleet, 8 moderators, shrink from 5 to 4-month employees, and then the casual labor pool was also reduced. In FY17, we also saw almost a $300,000 reduction again. This was when the 11 year-round LIOs were closed half-day Fridays, which at the time was compared to the court system, but in practice, it has not been practical. The court system entirely closes down. Judges, every employee goes home on Fridays. Having only one staff section within the Legislative Affairs Agency do that has created a bit of a disparity. No one can remember that we're closed. The law always requests meetings on Friday afternoon, so say, hey, I'll talk to you after lunch for this, and then have to remind them over again that I'm in June, you're going to have to talk to them today. So combined FY16 and 17, the cut totaled $656,700, which equates to 17.9% of our total budget over that 3-year time span. It has also had a significant negative impact on employee morale and retention. Over the time period of the cuts beginning to now, we've had 14 vacancies. 9 of those have been year-round positions. The LA manager has turned over twice. The information officers in Faro, Cordova, now in Kenai, Katsuri, Sitka, on Alaska, Valbuse, twice for Valbuse, information assistance, Anchorage and Juneau, administrative assistance in Anchorage and Juneau, information assistant in Anchorage. To compare that, prior 9 years to the PETS, only saw 8 vacancies. So we're already 6 vacancies higher in just a 2-year time period compared to the things before that. We come before you today to request restoring funding for the half-day Fridays. We know you can't just find money unless we're put in a position like we are now. We have a vacancy on Alaska LIO, which is historically our least utilized LIO. The total cost of restoring the LIOs to full-day Friday funding is roughly $107,000. Cost of operating the Unalaska LIO for $106,000.
Mr. Chairman, can I break in here just a second? This is Pete Kelly. I've got to go offline.
Thank you, Senator. Please continue, Mr. Powers.
So the cost to operate this 1 6-month LIO is virtually the same as restoring 17 positions to full-time status. I mean, bringing staff section back on par or counterparts within the agency. I believe the speaker has spoken to the mayor of Unalaska to field this idea out, and we don't want to take services away from communities, so we're in the very early stages of looking into developing, I'm going to call it a care package, and some training that we can offer public libraries around the state for communities that don't have LIOs. So we can still provide them with information, and there's a outlet for constituents to show up and get information. It wouldn't be from a trained information officer, but we would have some materials we would send out to these locations, so we're not completely cut off.
So could you interrupt? Could you talk to us about the situation on Alaska?
Yes. So on Alaska is the most recent LIO to open. In 2011, it opened its doors. It's funded as a 6-month position, so it operates yearly December through May. It is in our 60% geographic pay differential region, so it is one of the highest to employ someone at. And it's also been one of the lowest used offices in the state, from my note now. In 2016, this is just looking at teleconference participants. Has tracked by our digital witness registration system that if you chair a committee, you're familiar with the iPads logging all of the testifiers. In 2016, it had 5 people go to the LIO to testify. 2017, 2 people all session, and 2018, there was 0 teleconference participants logged from that. Yeah.
Thank you. Senator McKenna.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Have we done that analysis on all of the LIOs so that we know the utilization for all? Are there others that have similar, and Unalaska just happens to be the lowest in that? The reason I ask is Eagle River has, when I was on the assembly, Eagle River had the lowest number of riders on an annual basis in Anchorage, and so our bus service was continually cut, except our buses were totally full. It's just that it took an hour to round trip it each time. And so while people thought it was being underutilized, it was actually overutilized, but there were other factors involved like time. And so are there other LIOs that have low usage like Unalaska that aren't at the table today?
You can take a brief at ease. I have a chart that has been produced since the packets went out and is out.
Okay. Crystal, you get it. So let me a question along the same lines.
I can get it to you.
You're talking about teleconference usage.
Correct.
There are, I know, every LIO has a different profile and a different personality and its relationship with the community. Fairbanks, we have a lot of walk-ins. People come in, want to talk, either sit down with the LIO staff or get directed or someplace. Is there any, are you guys tracking that? I mean, how many people go into Unalaska and just to talk about with the staff there about issues? Is that
is that utilized? Is there any way to understand what that is?
Yes. Can I explain the graph that I just handed out?
Okay, go ahead.
So the graph that I handed out has two trend lines on it. The blue line is the total number of testifiers that participated on average for a calendar year between 2013 and 2018. That doesn't equitably look at how large a community is. You can see Anchorage and Fairbanks and Mat-Su are the highest spikes there on the blue line. So if you divide that by the total population, you get the percentage of the population that is utilizing the LAO. Now, that it is tough to account for people who testify frequently. So if one person testifies in 10 meetings, they do show up as 10 contacts on this chart. It is not tied to an individual person being active in time. It's how many times they're active. So if you look, looking at this chart, what you're looking for is where both the orange and the blue lines are low. So you have low traffic, and this is just looking at testifiers again. You have low total numbers, and when you factor in community size, it is also low. So there are two spots on there, the Kotzebue LAO and the Unalaska LAO there. They both show underutilized. Kotzebue LAO has been plagued with turnover. It's been hard to hire and keep someone there. It's also one of the offices that has turned from a 12 to a 6-month position. And it's turned over twice. Twice in the last 6 years, and if we go back, my tenure goes back to the LAA to 05. I did have SCIF pull historical documents to hiring. I want to say it's turned over 6 or 7 times since the 2000s.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Parris, thank you for all that you and your team do, both for the legislature and for the people of Alaska. I understand the burden of being in a position where you're laying off people. As a former executive director, I've had people's lives in my hands, and jobs are important to everyone, and those families are extremely affected by what we do. That being said, for the consideration of those on legislative council, my concern... let me first say, I hope that we can develop a care package that we can deploy to more than just on Alaska, but to communities that may not currently be represented, or like Kotzebue or others, that we may need to do something different there than hire full-time employees to be able to staff some of these connections to the legislative process. I'm concerned that we're still in a budget deficit and that these are reoccurring expenses on the operating budget. And while I think the closure is a good recommendation in this time that we're walking through with finances in Alaska, I have a hard time supporting adding full-time. I understand the inequities, and I understand the challenge as a director and that your team may face, and I do value those, but I have a hard time supporting not just saving the $100,000 and actually taking a bit broader look at how we look at the connection between the people and Alaskans, because there are other communities that are similarly situated to Unalaska, and we can't not afford to have people connected to our government. And so I think that next year, as we move a budget process forward, or as you, those who may win election or re-election this November, I'm concerned that we're going to go back into a legislative cycle. You're going to go back into a legislative budget cycle and be looking for cuts. At least some people who are elected will be looking for cuts. And if we restore the 4 hours on Friday afternoon, won't that be right back on the table when you go into the process next year in June? The legislature will look to tighten its belt again. I don't see – oil is in much better position at $72, $75 per barrel, so the state will be in a much better position. But we have people either continuing or coming into the process that maybe have different ideas on our budget. And so I'm concerned with adding something until we take a more holistic approach. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator McKinnon, we did not stop at just closing the LAOs for half-day Fridays. We found many other areas of efficiencies on top of that cut that we were handed. So the fleet of iPads that you're familiar with that operates the digital witness system, we turned off the AT&T cellular data for that for savings of $10,000 a year. We upgraded to digital teleconference phone circuits, and that reduced our costs $17,680 a year. We've enforced geographic calling, call blocking, so Juno and Anchorage callers cannot call the 800 number. We're incurring $1,000 to $2,000 in just people calling from the capital to call the long distance toll free number to call into teleconferences. So by blocking Juno phones from calling the 800 number, we've reduced that cost. We've upgraded our circuit that we provide the AKL TV streaming on. It lowered our cost slightly, but it also doubled our bandwidth by going to a newer technology for that. We've also taken on publishing the Pocket Directory. Formerly, it was printed here in a print shop in Anchorage where you have to set 13,000 copies, and there's no option to get less than that through a contract process. We've cut that price in a third. It was formerly printed at 33 cents a copy. We designed it, maintain it, and print it in our own print shop now. We print it for about 11 cents a copy. And then we can call John at the print shop and say, hey, we need 1,000, 2,000. We don't have to print the full 13,000 and then cycle 5,000 at the end. The same with the DOSO. We've stripped off the color photo cover and gone back to the regular paper cover. And that's reduced costs from 75 cents to 50 cents a copy. So we are exploring many other ways of reducing our cost footprint.
Senator McKinnon.
Mr. Power, thank you for those excellent projects that you and your team have moved forward. Are you suggesting that the legislature will see a lower budget request than last year based on those cost savings?
Defer to the executive director on this one.
Ms. Geary, thank you.
Again, for the record, Jessica Geary, Executive Director of Legislative Affairs, through the Chair, Senator McKinnon. This is something that's been on our mind because we've heard the complaints from the employees and from the public and from legislators that can't schedule meetings. And so Tim and I met early on in the session, and we discussed sort of, you know, if there was an appropriate time to bring this up. And so what I told him is we needed to wait and see how FY18 closed out, because I didn't want to be in the situation where, you know, we've spent all our money and we're having to come back to the table and ask for more. So we're actually in a really good position, and so I'm hopeful that that we will be able to reduce our budget request, or at least perhaps reallocate it to another area that's lacking in funding. So we're going to start budget discussions early this year and take a more holistic approach to how we budget. And so I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You are doing excellent work. You and your team are doing excellent work. All of the team that is supporting the legislature is doing excellent work. If we don't have the money, I have a hard time supporting the request. It doesn't mean that I don't totally understand exactly where you're at and the struggles that you're facing. And I appreciate bringing the conversation forward for that. Thank you, Mr. Powers, because I do believe that you are leading a dynamic team that is doing more with less. And the general public is the one that is losing out. The legislature is inconvenienced if we can't have our teleconference on Friday, but it's the general public who we want to keep connected. So I just can't support not knowing where the legislature will be in requesting cuts again, not to keep the status quo until we get a little bit further down the road. That doesn't mean I don't support you and your team, or if I'm outvoted today, that there's going to be any hard feelings, because there will not be. Thank you for your service.
So it's inevitable for me that it's Friday afternoon, especially if I have to call the East Coast. Something happens. Have you, in your deliberations, thought about
Monday mornings. I mean, what is the most inconvenient time to not have the office open? I know there isn't a time or one less hour a day or, you know, where do you put it? I know in Fairbanks with only one staff now, it's really a great inconvenience.
Mr. Chairman, Tuesday afternoons during session. The committee meetings.
Okay.
Convenient time to close us.
Okay. Senator McKenna.
Mr. Chairman, how I interpreted your question was, is there a better time than Friday afternoons that is would create less problem for staff or the request? For the public. Could you move the closure to Monday afternoon? And the reason why we talked about those things is we're trying to give staff a benefit, too. The benefit is that you would come into late work on Monday if your team thought that that would be less distractive to the general public and then still a benefit to them to have a longer weekend. I mean, that was a consideration, at least, of mine when that thought process went forward. But I understand inequity of pay in the sense that those hours are not available and it's creating a challenge to get a full-time employee in there because it's sporadic work, basically. So it takes a particular family and a particular person that's willing to accept those conditions.
If you were to split the week up, I don't have a breakdown of when our requests come in or when interim meetings are held, but every day of the week, we have the little chat box in the corner of the website. Every day of the week, 8:30 in the morning, the chats start coming in. I think last year we did about 2,000. I haven't, since the article highlighting our chat service came out in the NCSL magazine, and we're trending online to hit that mark again this year. But anyway, any time you close the LAOs, you're closing that outlet for the public to call and get bill information. We're the face on the website, what the public has been trained to call, who to call, who to get the information from. So any time of the week that we're closed will be an inconvenience for you.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Now, I want to go back to talk a moment about the retention issue. And I wasn't able to see from your presentation, you know, when in the last, you know, number of years the retention issue has sort of popped up. Do you anticipate that will, under the current budgeting scheme, continue? And what are the impacts to retraining new personnel and trying to recruit, I guess, more often than you were previously?
Thank you, Representative Eastman. Through the chair, we run biannual trainings. Every other year, we will get all the information officers together. I took this position in June of last year, so we immediately started planning for December training session, knowing that we had several vacancies. We had three or four new information officers that came onto the job and went straight to our training, got it. We're not going to be afforded that that possibility this year. It's the off year for our training. Got recruitments posted for Glen Allen and Valdez currently, and being now today, possibly on Alaska. They're going to have to be paired up with an existing staff member and trained remotely. There won't be any in-person hands-on training. For the retention, we've seen many of the long-term employees. They're the ones who are, and we're bringing in the tier four now. So we're losing our tier one, two, three employees because when they took this cut, their salary went down almost 10% overnight. I believe meetings on a Wednesday or a Thursday to close the LAOs Friday afternoons effective the following day. So employees didn't even know the topic was coming up at the meeting, saw the vote, and then were told tomorrow you'll leave at noon and you're going to take about a 10% pay cut when the cut is in effect. The problem with retention that we've had, especially for employees that are near the end of their career, is the high three or high five for retirement. In effect, it's about a 6-7% annual pay cut. So for those employees in longevity at the end of their career, it would take them two steps or 4 years working, unless their seasonal offices were infected, so that doesn't matter. But 4 years to get back to where they were to start over their high five or high three. So for keeping employees in the long term, it is a big problem for keeping people who are in the pension system. And then for attrition, newly hired employees, so far we're pretty new in this. It's our second year, approaching 2 full years of having half-day Fridays. We are already rehiring for one position that was hired last year, and we have another long-time employee. So.
Thank you.
Debbie, Rick.
Yes.
A couple of points. Of all the LIOs around the state, which ones, LIO offices do not house legislative offices? Alaska's one of them. I don't have an
Alaska's office. One. I'm trying to, it's always fluid as legislators come and go. The Kotzebue office recently began housing Representative Lincoln. That formerly did not have a legislator in it, so that could attribute for a low volume. Because when there's no legislator in district, no office, the door is locked for 6 months. It's not like someone is still going into the office during that time period. Cordova, Delta Junction, there is an office there, but it's not always used. Glen Allen. Down the list. I don't have a list of those. And I'm just Petersburg, just going off of our list of LAOs and who he knows in the area. Choctaw, Alaska, Valdez sometimes has people stop through. And then Wrangell's not staffed full time.
So, Mr. Chairman, I don't bring it up to quibble with the decision, but I think that's a factor, and it sort of speaks to the widespread nature of Alaska and how we got so many communities out there that they're just off on their own, if you will, and don't have that sort of impetus like maybe a Fairbanks LIO does or an Anchorage LIO that you've got several legislative offices there, so you just normally sort of, get more traffic. The other point I would bring up is, a personal beef of mine, and that's navigating websites. I don't care whether it's Division of Elections or it's APOC or it's whatever, but LA's website is not, I think it's been improving over the years, but the basis system, for example, sometimes pretty hard to navigate. And somebody's just off the street, you're in a jungle. And the first thing you do is you pick up the phone, you call the LIO, or if you have one that's nearby, you stop by and just talk to the LIO officer or your legislative staffer. But have you, Tim, looked, really focused on that aspect too, and the sort of continual search for efficiencies?
Representative to the chair, the entire legislative process is a jungle for anyone off the street. The website is very hard to pass on the information of how to navigate that process without actually talking to someone. There's no good tool to hand them and say, read this and become an expert on the process. We have put a lot of work into our website.
Can I just jump in? Have you researched that? Have you talked to people off the street and said, what can we do to improve this? Because it is difficult, even for somebody who's been in the jungle for a while.
Mm-hmm. So we are taking steps to make improvements to the website to tackle just that. Some visual bill tracking progress bars. So when you pull up a bill page, there will be icons that will show you every committee of referral, and it'll fill in with color as the bill progresses through, completes passage with a signature, or some other, and if the bill's not done signed into law. We put a lot of work into the website about 3 years ago. We did a complete redesign, and last year we were actually awarded NCSL's Online Democracy Award for the best legislative website. And Mr. Banaszak and myself sat on the selection committee for this year's winner. So we selected Massachusetts. So if you want to take a peek, that's where we're going to steal our visual bill tracker idea from. But we are constantly looking at other states' designs, evaluating what works for them, how we can make this better.
The point I would make is that sometimes getting the toll-free number, you know, when I'm out in Dillingham, there's a hearing. You know, I've got to call my staff to get a number, and so I wonder if somebody else wants to patch into, you know, from an off-net site. I think that should be an area of focus as well. And I really appreciate the comment about the caregiving package out in Alaska, but the internet out in the public library there. When I was out there in September last year, I couldn't hardly send a text. So I think the effort is going to be well-intentioned, but until they get better broadband services there, Mr. Chairman, that's not a tip or hand off here, but that's just something to keep in mind, too.
Through the chair, publishing the off-net number, we've gone round and round about that. Historically, we used to only have 48 phone lines coming into the teleconference network, so it was a big deal. Phone lines would fill up. People would get a busy signal. So we would try and get people to listen online. At the time, we didn't have a streaming service. Gavel to Gavel was the only place to go to watch stuff. We've made many improvements throughout the years. Now we have 90 phone lines for a lot less money, about two-thirds to half the cost of what we used to have for 48. And we can even surge higher than that. It just takes more money to license our teleconference server higher than that. It is, since we've been enforcing the call blocking, Juno must call. Juno can't call the 800 number. Anchorage can't call the 800 number. We have local numbers for them. A lot of times people ask, what's the number to call in? It no longer is, here's the number. Yeah, it takes a little bit more work to ask them where they're from, just to make sure they have the right number. So when they call it, they're not going to get a message that says, you can't call this number from your area. At times, committee staff have requested we don't publish the number because committee staff want to know who's going to call in. They want to be the one to give out the number. So we have to defer to committee staff's requests to keep that number unpublished as well. By publishing the number, people call in from their home. Audio quality is not always as great. They're calling in on a cell phone. They've got kids crying in the background, dogs barking. We try to urge people to go to their LIO if they have one. If they do not, we're more than happy to hand out that number at their request. We do publish our office's 800 number right on the front page of the website, so anyone with a question can call and talk to us and help them through the process. When constituents call in to get that number from us, we don't simply give them the number and say, thanks, have a nice day. We will talk to them about what committee they want to call in for. If they're calling in for public testimony, we'll inform them how to provide that testimony. They're going to be put on hold in a queue. They're going to be able to hear everything that goes on, but they're not going to be able to speak. As soon as the chair calls on them, they'll hear a computer voice tell them they're unmuted, and they'll have to abide by the time frame that the chair gives them to provide their testimony in. So it's simply posting the number and saying, for public testimony, call here. There's a lot more to it, and we like to interact with them and give them more information than just a call.
So just a final point, according to what was handed to me, there's 22 LIO offices throughout the state, and 13 have legislative offices sort of housed, I guess, in the same.
Anybody online with a comment or a question? Seeing none. Kenan?
Mr. Chairman, the microphone, it can be a powerful thing, and so I could just right now make a different motion than is written in front of me. And so what I'd like to know is consideration from those that are here and online. Mr. Chairman, is it all right if I bifurcate the question into two motions, or would you like me to read it as such?
No, I think there's been enough discussion that I'll support you bifurcate, separate question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just didn't want to do that on my own. I don't think that's fair. Mr. Chairman, the first motion would be I move that Legislative Council approve closing the Unalaska Dutch Harbor LIO.
Please call the roll.
Representative Klayman.
Yes.
Representative Edgman.
Reluctantly, yes.
Representative Millett.
She's off.
Representative Miller?
Oh, is she on?
Representative Ortiz?
Yes.
Representative Stutes?
Boy, this is a tough one. I'm going to have to vote no. I'm sorry.
Representative Drummond?
Yes.
Representative Eastman?
Yes.
Senator McKinnon?
Yes.
Vice Chair Stedman? Vice Chair Stedman? Chair Gettenberg?
Yes. Was somebody trying to get on? It sounds like there was some noise. Somebody trying to get off mute. If not, we'll just close it.
This is Representative Stutes. I'd like to change my vote, please. Nay to yay.
Representative Stutes, now showing yay.
Thank you.
8 yays, 0 nays.
Yes, thank you.
Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that Legislative Council restore 17 positions currently budgeted for 11.3 months to 12 months effective immediately.
Please call the roll.
Representative Klayman.
Yes.
Representative Edgman.
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Stutes.
Yes.
Representative Drummond.
Yes.
Representative Eastman.
No.
Senator McKinnon.
No.
Vice Chair Stedman. Chair Guttenberg.
Yes.
6 yays, 2 nays.
So the motion passes.
Mr. Chairman, is that a quorum?
8 is a quorum. Ms. Wallace, we need 8 votes. Oh, brief it is. Back online? Are we back online? We're back online. Doug Gardner, are you there? Doug Gardner?
I am, Representative Guttenberg. Good morning.
So, Mr. Gardner, the question was, was it 6-2? Does that pass, or is there another qualification? If, for example, does it have to be one member from both bodies, or one member, I guess that's the question. Is there a balance between
both bodies.
Representative Guttenberg, the a 6-2 vote is not effective at Ledge Council. Ledge Council has to have 8 votes to take action. So theoretically, 8 members present with 8-0 carries a motion, but 6-2 does not, and the motion has failed.
So we have to have 8 positive votes to pass a motion.
Correct. And you have to have 8 people present, obviously, at a minimum. So if it's 6-2 at Ledge Council, the motion fails.
Okay. So the motion to close the Unalaska Dutch Harbor LIO passes, but the motion to restore the positions fails. Okay. At this point, we will move on to the agenda, and I think we have... Thank you, Mr. Gardner.
You bet.
Mr. Chairman, I move Legislative Council go into executive session under Uniform Rule 22B, 2, 3, and 4 for discussions of matters that may be by law required to be confidential. Any legislator not on council are welcome to stay. The following staff member are allowed to stay: Doug Gardner, Megan Wallace, Kevin Cuddy, Jessica Gary, Eliana.
Sangree,
Crystal Keeneman, and Julie Lucky.
Everyone else, please excuse us. So we're ready to come out of it. Okay, we are out of executive session, and at this point, we have a motion. Senator McKinnon.
Mr. Chairman, I move that Legislative Council authorize the chair, working through the Legal Services Division and outside counsel, to negotiate a dismissal of the appeal filed by the 716 West 4th Avenue with the Alaska Supreme Court in exchange for Legislative Council agreeing not to pursue its judgment and award of attorney's fees awarded to Legislative Council as prevailing party by the Superior Court, and to include other terms and conditions consistent with such an agreement.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I support this motion. It is not uncommon in cases in which there's an attorney's fee award and a potential appeal that there'll be a compromise in which one party gives up their claim for getting attorney's fees in exchange for not having to go through the appeal. And this appears to be a reasonable end to a long process.
Anybody else? Please call the roll.
Representative Klayman.
Yes.
Representative Edgman.
Yes.
Representative Millett. Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Stoops?
Yes.
Representative Drummond?
Yes.
Representative Eastman?
Yes.
Representative McKinnon?
Yes.
Vice Chair Stedman? Vice Chair Stedman?
Yes.
Eight yeas.
Thank you. We have another amendment, another motion.
Mr. Chairman, in regards to the IT conversation earlier, I move that Legislative Council authorize the House and Senate Chambers voting system replacement cost of $912,700 with a project contingency of $91,270 and approve the Section 040 exemption of the legislative procurement procedures.
Any further discussion? Please call the roll.
Representative Klayman.
Yes.
Representative Edmonds.
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Stutes.
Yes.
Representative Drummond.
Yes.
Representative Eastman.
Yes.
Senator McKinnon.
Yes.
Vice Chair Sedman. Chair Guttenberg.
Yes.
8 yeas, 0 nays.
Thank you. That passes. In the interest of time, the upcoming agenda items we will send out to you and continue to have phone calls. And with that, I'm going to conclude the meeting. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, senators and representatives. We are adjourned.